Good evening. Welcome to Health Chat. I'm your host, Lenor Mudu. Today, we will discuss painkiller addiction. The U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention says that opioids, a class of drugs that includes prescription pain medications and heroin, were involved in more than 28,000 deaths in 2014 in the United States. Recently, the U.S. House of Representatives has passed a comprehensive bill on opioid abuse, a group of 18 measures designed to combat the nation's epidemic of addiction to painkillers. There are no official statistics for this issue globally, especially in Africa, but we will discuss how this is being a growing problem in the United States and what can we learn from this. And what can the world learn from this and what is being done? And joining me today to discuss this very critical issue is first Dr. Peggy Compton, who is joining us from Washington, D.C., Georgetown University. Dr. Compton is Associate Dean for Research, Evaluation and Graduation Programs at Georgetown School of Nursing and Health Studies. And Dr. Compton will join us very shortly to discuss this topic. We are also joined via phone from Washington, D.C. by Dr. George Kolodner. Dr. Kolodner is founder and medical director of the Colmac Outpatient Recovery Centers that are throughout the United States. Dr. Kolodner, welcome to the show. And Dr. Peggy, are you there?
I am.
Okay, great. I didn't hear you. All right. Thank you so much for joining us.
It's a pleasure to be here. Thanks for asking.
And our third guest is Stephen Hayes. Stephen Hayes should be joining us. Do we have him on the phone?
Mr. Stephen Hayes? I'm on the phone.
Thank you. Oh, great, great. Thank you. Thank you for joining us. It's so nice to have you with us today. And we will have Dr. Kolodner join us in a while, in a little bit. But let's get right to it and talk about this issue. And let me introduce Dr. Stephen Hayes, Mr. Stephen Hayes. And please correct me if I'm not getting your title wrong. I have former director of Novice Detox Center in Florida.
That's correct.
And are you with the Foundation for a Drug-Free World?
I do speaking for them because I have had extensive experience in dealing firsthand with people who became addicted, many of whom didn't start off wanting to get high but were prescribed opioids and because of their nature became addicted to them. So I have done a fair amount of speaking for them, yes.
Okay, great, great. And thank you for joining us. And this whole issue of opioids is really mind-boggling. I have to say it's disconcerting because we people take these to fight pain, to really address pain and other issues. But then they become addicted. Some people become addicted to it. And you touched on it, Mr. Hayes. And can you explain to us, Dr. Compton, let me come to you. What are opioids? Help us to understand what they are.
Sure. And that's not an uncommon question. Opioids is basically a large term for any kind of substance, any chemical or drug that binds to the opioid receptors in the body. As many people know, we make our own endogenous opioids so that we have endogenous opioid receptors. And when we take opioids medically or to use them illicitly to abuse them, they bind to those same receptors. So heroin is an opioid. Methadone is an opioid. Prescription pain relievers like morphine, Demerol, Percocet, these are all opioids. So it's a very broad term that really captures many types of substances or happen to bind to these receptors.
Mm. And Mr. Hayes, could you talk to us about how addictive they are?
Well, as the doctor knows, will tell you, I'm sure, molecularly, it's almost identical. Oxycodone, which is the chief component of Oxycontin, which is perhaps the most prescribed opioid of that type, it's very, very similar to heroin, but the effects in the body are almost identical. So what can happen is that you have people who start taking these pills, and quite honestly, we had only a few people, this was in 2006, who were addicted to painkillers, and that number kept growing. We had more people on heroin. And then it changed, and it became they were addicted to the opioids because they were clinically pure. You weren't buying it from a guy around the corner. You were getting pharmaceutical-grade heroin. And then when they got taken off, as the time went on and doctors refused to prescribe it or the legal requirements became where they couldn't get it, they turned back to heroin because essentially it was the same type of high that they would get the same relief. And so pretty much what has happened is a number of people who were prescribed these opioids, sometimes for valid reasons and sometimes perhaps, you know, simply the the doctor was trying to address their pain and not looking at the actual cause, they took it and they became very dependent on it. And when they tried to stop taking it, the effects of withdrawal were, as one person described to me, think of the worst case of the flu you can think of and multiply by 10.
Okay. Let me welcome Dr. Kolodner. Dr. George Kolodner is an addiction psychiatrist who specializes in outpatient treatment of substance use disorders. And he is, as I mentioned earlier, medical director of the Colmac Outpatient Recovery Centers. Dr. Kolodner, thank you so much for joining us. Let me ask you this. There were reports about the fact that prescription drug abuse has reached an epidemic level in the United States in the last decades. How accurate is this? I mean, how much of a problem is it in the United States?
Are you asking me? I'm sorry.
Yes, Dr. Kolodner, yes.
I can speak directly for our experience in the Washington and Baltimore area.
Okay.
Where 15 years ago, the people with opioid addiction made up about 8% of our patients, and now they make up more. They make up 30%. Back when it was 8%, there was a clear division between inner city use of heroin, usually by blue collar folks, and the suburban use of prescription opioids. By white-collar folks, but that all changed, at least in our area, changed because of the young people who came in and just used whatever was available to them. So there's a lot of mixing, and the demography has shifted, but no question there's been a dramatic increase, and it's pretty clear that was driven by physicians who without knowing how potent the opioids could be, were prescribing them in larger amounts, more potent formulations, higher doses, and sending people off with more pills. And there's some attempt to correct that now. Hopefully we'll be able to reverse that.
That's very interesting. And Dr. Compton, what have you come across in your research in terms of some of the causes, the reasons why this trend seems to be increasing?
Well, I think, and it's not just my research, but that, you know, back in, it's almost an historical artifact in a way. You know, back in the early 90s, just started to think about prescribing opioids for the treatment of chronic pain, because for many years the field felt that opioids were not the best medications or really not indicated for people with chronic pain. And so since the early 1990s, we've really taken more of a proactive approach with respect to trying to manage people's pain, their chronic pain, which I think is a good thing. But one of the ways that we've really relied on managing that pain has been with opioids. And I can say that the literature is not great, or we don't have a lot of literature to support the use of opioids for chronic pain, so that we are prescribing medications to people that may not be really appropriate or helpful for managing their pain.
Very interesting. Now, Mr. Hayes, you, as a former director of Novus Detox Center in Florida, Dr. Kolodner talked about this region. What can you tell us about that region when you were heading the center in Florida in terms of the number of people that were coming in with this very addiction?
Well, we saw probably, in our situation, it was probably closer to 80% of the people who came in were on opioids. And in some weeks, it might be as much as 90 to 100%. It's a total epidemic, and we were getting mostly people who had been prescribed initially. Most of our people that came in were prescribed it for some type of injury and then became addicted. Many of them became users of street-bought opioids, or they would buy it in other names. And I mean, it became so bad that there were clinics, particularly in Florida, but I think around the country, where you could go into a clinic and say, I have a back pain, and for $200 visit, walk out with 50 to 100 OxyContin pills. And that was the way many of them fed their habit, by doctor shopping. And it just continued. And when that became tougher to get, as I said, many of them went to heroin. We started to see more and more people on heroin coming to see us who had started off on opioids.
Okay. Now, Dr. Kalodner, tell us about, you mentioned a very interesting and important fact here, the role of physicians prescribing these opioids to patients. To what extent, you clearly say that it was one of the reasons. So how do we address this issue? Are there the primary cause? Are there, if we address this with the physicians, is it a possibility that the problem drops tremendously? Are they responsible?
Absolutely. We had a similar situation in the 1890s and early 1900s, and by physicians getting together really changing the practice of their colleagues, they were able to take care of this in a significant way. And we're in the process of doing that again. The Center for Disease Control just last month released guidelines about the use of opioids, the proper use of opioids for chronic pain. Most of us didn't get trained in medical school as to how to manage chronic pain, but we did learn to be cautious, maybe overly cautious, about the use of opioids. And then in the 1990s, commercial interests, particularly the Purdue Pharma people, campaigned very effectively to try to reassure doctors that these could be used safely and effectively. And they re-educated a whole group of physicians about that. And now those physicians have to be uneducated, so to speak. And students in medical school really need to be educated properly. Last week, the new president of the American Medical Association came out in support of the guidelines from the CDC, so we can't mandate the doctors do that, but our hope is with more education and well-meaning doctors will follow the new guidelines, and those that are not well-meaning hopefully will be acted upon by medical authorities and outside authorities to keep them from doing the kind of things that you just heard described in some of those clinics all over the country. But Broward County was very famous for having four of the five biggest prescriber of opioid medications until the state had to come in.
Okay. Dr. Compton, how do people go from just taking a prescription drug for pain to becoming an addict? Tell us about this transition. What does it take? I mean, is it that addictive?
Well, certainly the drugs themselves are very addictive, but we know in general that addictive disease, or substance use disorder, as we call it in the field, has genetic, environmental, and also triggers that can induce the presence of substance use disorder. So it's a multifactorial sort of disease. There's not a single gene or a single thing that can happen in your growing up that will result in you developing a substance use disorder. In pain patients, to try and determine whether or not they really are suffering from a substance use disorder, we look to see how functional they are. If they've got chronic pain and you're giving them opioids on a regular basis to treat that pain, they should look better. They should be able to do more. They should be able to, you know, work, take care of their kids, do those sorts of things that we would consider a functional part of life. People, though, who have a substance use disorder are going to use these medications in such a way that they will not be able to live a functional sort of life. They'll have difficulty, you know, maintaining work and family responsibilities. So it's almost looking to see how the patients are responding to these opioids. A chronic pain patient who's receiving opioids and doing very well on opioids, we're not so concerned about a substance use disorder. But it's those patients where we're prescribing opioids and they don't look any better that we need to consider in our differential diagnosis whether or not they may be suffering a substance use disorder.
May I say this for the doctors? One of the things that we observe almost one for one, not quite, because as Dr. Humstock said, a lot of the variations are going to be from patient to patient, but the whole idea of what was called opioid-induced hyperalgesia was very apparent because many of the people that came to see us, again, they were put on it by a prescription, by MDs. They weren't buying it on the street. They found that they needed ever-increasing amounts of opioids to get any kind of relief, and as the amount of the opioid ingested increased, their functionality directly decreased to where many of them were, you know, well, there were actually some, one unfortunately was supposed to come to me on a Monday, and he died in his sleep on the Saturday before because he was taking so much opioids and it acted as such a depressant on his system. So I don't know how many experiences the doctors have had, but almost one for one we saw that most of these people that had been put on opioids, that there was a tendency for the tolerance to grow to where they had to take increasing amounts, and this is what caused the most severe problems.
And that was Mr. Hayes. Dr. Kolodner, would you mind reacting to this? How much have you seen in this specific case?
Which part of the question do you want me to focus on?
In terms of the increase of the use of opioid, as the more the patient is given the drug to decrease the pain, the more they become addicted. And Mr. Hayes, you can correct me if I'm.
Well, it's the opioid induced hyperalgesia. I'm sure the doctors are familiar with that. Just the idea that they're going to become more and more tolerant, in layman's terms, of the opioids and have to take increasing doses to achieve the same relief of pain.
Right, and tolerance is a well-known phenomenon that we don't understand very well. One of the most effective medications that we have working with this disorder is actually an opioid. It's called buprenorphine, which is a different kind of opioid. It still has certain dangers, but it does not seem to induce the kind of tolerance that these other opioids do. We don't understand quite why that is. And so it's kind of a double-edged sword. And some people feel that it is wrong to use an opioid to treat an opioid disorder. But many of us others find that we can, if we use it right, we can have a much higher level of success in the treatment than we did without that. And methadone existed before buprenorphine and had a similar result.
Okay. Now, looking at alternatives to addressing the issue, what are some of the solutions, Dr. Compton? Let me start with you.
Well, I think that we get so focused on treating pain with opioids that we forget that there are a myriad of other sorts of pain-relieving or pain-management sorts of approaches that are out there. Certainly exercise, physical therapy, acupuncture, stress mediation, stress moderation sorts of processes. There are many, many different – heat, cold. There are many different ways that we can manage pain rather than running for the medication bottle or the opioid bottle. I think one of the concerns, though, that we have, or one of the issues, is that if you come in to see your physician with a chronic pain condition, he may not have the ability to refer you to, or your insurance may not cover something like acupuncture, something that's an alternative to opioids. So clinicians are a little bit stuck right now in that what insurance companies will cover and what kinds of referrals physicians can make, it's much easier to write a prescription than it is to try to set a patient up with acupuncture.
Interesting. Mr. Hayes, what are some of the solutions?
Well, I think she's hit and covered many of the things. That there are a lot of things that go into it. What we had is a tremendous amount of success from getting people who had been prescribed for an injury for the most part or some other type of serious pain in to see alternative providers, physical therapists and all, because if you don't relieve the cause of the pain, the person, they may come off an opioid, but they're going to go back on the opioid because the pain is too great, or they're going to seek other relief from alcohol or something else. It's just not going to work. So we encourage people to go and get alternative therapies. We found people that, you know, benefited from chiropractic. We found people that benefited from physical therapy. And other people got exercises that helped them. So I think there are lots of opportunities to go and try to find out what the cause is of why they're having this pain and not just mask it, which is all it is. The opioid is not treating the pain. It's masking the pain. It's keeping you from feeling the pain. But it doesn't, in most cases, in fact, I don't think in any case, address the cause of the pain. And so, and that's the reason why I think opioids on any long-term basis are only really required for people where nothing else is going to work and they just have to be, or you want them to have some relief from pain. And, for example, people who have a terminal illness and incredible pain, there's every reason in my mind to let them have whatever opioids they need to cushion that, to relieve that pain. But everybody else, I think we should be very diligent in trying to find the cause of the pain and help correct that, as opposed to simply masking the pain with very, very dangerous drugs.
And Dr. Kolodner, would you like to react to some of the solutions?
Yes, pain is not my specialty, but one of the things that I've heard recently from pain specialists that struck me was that's also the issue of expectation, that at one point, if you went in for an operation, you expected to have a certain level of pain. And there's been some expectation and not of relieving pain, but eliminating it. And the damage that you do in trying to reduce pain from a manageable level to a zero level, the cure begins to be more dangerous than the pain itself. And just letting people know that that reducing pain to a manageable level is sometimes acceptable and maybe a better alternative than trying to erase it entirely.
What about Dr. Kolodner? If we look at the psychiatric aspect of it, in terms of the addictions, when somebody is addicted, how do you address this? If you don't even look at pain management, but you want to talk about the psychiatric aspect of it, as I mentioned earlier, what would you do?
Well, for one thing, you don't want to, even though I'm not a pain specialist, when my people come in and they have both pain and addiction, I do try to do something with the pain, and that's where buprenorphine can help reduce the level of the pain. But pain itself is a highly psychological phenomenon, and the context of the pain really determines how tolerable or intolerable it is. So if you have a pain with something that you think might become a terminal cancer, then that can be very different than if you have pain from an injury in, say, a war setting that didn't kill you but is your ticket home. That kind of pain can be much more tolerable. So the psychology of it is very important.
Yes, yes, indeed. And Dr. Compton, we, as I mentioned earlier, there was the CDC, of course, talk about the fact that this is an issue that is growing in the United States, and we saw the measure that Congress took to address this issue. What is your reaction to that?
Well, I think it's wonderful that we're really now focusing on what we call responsible prescribing, such that clinicians who are treating pain with opioids, whether it's chronic pain, acute pain, cancer pain, that they're really knowledgeably and thoughtfully thinking about the potential adverse events or adverse effects for prescribing a very strong medication, which opioids are. So I'm pleased to see the CDC guidelines, and I'm pleased to see some of our federal resources looking at this issue. I do want to point out that the CDC guidelines don't take into account the, you know, between 300,000 and 500,000 people that we currently have in this country who are on opioid therapy for the treatment of their chronic pain. Detoxifying those patients off of their opioids and introducing other pain management strategies is not necessarily a straightforward sort of procedure. So I do have some concerns that the CDC guidelines were a little simplistic or not thinking beyond their guidelines to what that means for clinical practice.
Mm-hmm. And Mr. Hayes, how much impact do you see this having, the U.S. House of Representatives, Congress's move on this issue?
Well, I think it's all good. We're bringing attention to it. I think there may be more attention to the use of naloxone and other things for overdoses of opioids and less attention on helping develop and help physicians who are handicapped by not being able to send people, as Dr. Comstock said, for alternative therapies, to help them by perhaps requiring insurance companies to cover some of these things because they are benefits. And like the other two guest, I am very, very concerned that if you simply, as an MD, say to someone, I have to cut you way back on your opioid dose, that most of those people, not most, but many of them, particularly the ones that came to see us, either tried to acquire opioids to fill that need that they felt they had, either on the black market, or they switched to heroin. I had some people in very high positions who you would not have thought who became addicted to opioids prescribed. And when the doctors legitimately became concerned and tried to cut back their script, they switched to heroin. So I believe there's less to be a lot more attention on getting alternative types of treatment. And also there needs to be a lot of attention on how we safely help these people come off of something which all of us on the call know is incredibly difficult to do on their own. They need a lot of help, and I think that's one of the things that has to be done if we're going to be effective.
And that leads me to you, Dr. Colodner, in terms of detox for those who are on opioid. What does it take? I'm sure there is a lot more involved. There is a lot involved, but if you can just give us a sense of how challenging and what it takes really quick.
Well, I think detox is sometimes a misdirection. That's where the buprenorphine comes in. If you get people off of opioids before they're given the tools to deal with their substance use disorder, then you're just setting them up to relapse. And so there's a lot of money, time, and effort spent getting people off over and over and over again. Uh-huh. So I think a much better strategy is to stabilize people for a period of time until they get their life stable and they have a strong recovery plan.
Okay.
And then take them off, because as wonderful as these medications like buprenorphine and methadone are, they're only ancillary, and people who try to use them instead of treatment, I think, end up being disappointed.
Okay.
The actual withdrawal process, if you are just on, if you go into a hospital and you have a procedure acutely, then just being tapered off the medication pretty simply is enough to be successful. But if you
okay.
have a substance use disorder,
okay.
and you've been on it for a long time.
Okay, Dr. Colodner, we have to leave it there, unfortunately. We're running out of time. Thank you so much for joining us, Dr. George Colodner, with the Colmack Center, of Outpatient Recovering Center. Thank you. And thank you, Dr. Peggy Compton, Associate Dean for Research Evaluation in Grad Programs at Georgetown School of Nursing and Health Studies.
Thank you.
And Mr. Stephen Hayes, Foundation for Drug-Free World and former Director of Novice Detox Center in Florida. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Bye now.
I'm your host, Lina Ormudu in Washington with producer Jackson Vungani. Take care, be well, and strive to make every day a healthy day.
Thank you.
Stay tuned.